Here we are back one more time. Good evening, folks. Oh, my goodness. Stop. Okay. Yeah. November 1st. Think about that. Wasn't it just a couple of months ago? It was August. Now it's November. Almost time for Christmas and our wonderful anti-Christmas Christmas specials here on the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Take a preview from my one and only show that was featured, which was my Christmas show, and take a listen to it for a preview of what we have coming up for our November and December Christmas specials, the war on Christmas that the liberals have been perpetrating for the last 10 years or so. Well, today, today, November 1st, 2011, AD, beautiful Alexandria, Virginia, United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. And I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. And, you know, I decided I'm going to start this show off a different way today. I'm going to be candid about a few things. And they have everything to do with anti-Semitism and what's occurring on Wall Street in the way of anti-Semitism. Now, I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. First on the north side, then the south side, and back to the north. So in Chicago, in my household, as in most African-American or black, which is what I prefer, households, there is a lot of anti-Semitism, or at least rather it was, that was the case when I was growing up. For whatever reason, none of which I can explain, black folks have been jealous, envious, and resentful of Jews. In my household, in my neighborhood, oh yeah, I listened. You know, in our household back in the old days, a child was to be seen and not heard. In fact, that was the order of the day when company would come over. We were to be seen and not heard, and sometimes not even seen. Probably in our room somewhere. But we heard a lot. And on occasion, the topic of Jews would come up. Them Jews this, them Jews that. We even had an area of Chicago called Maxwell Street, where Jewish people would congregate to sell their wares. I mean, anything you could think of. Street sales, like a giant swap meet, but only outside in a neighborhood / business center. Those of you who are listening to this show who know Chicago back in the 70s know what I'm talking about. The area was called Jewtown. And the reason why that area around Maxwell Street was called Jewtown is because one could go and buy anything, almost anything, very cheaply. I mean, we would go buy t-shirts, clothes, stereos. It was all sold on the streets on very large folding tables. And on occasion, when we became a little less than of age, we would go to get fake IDs. Place to go was Jewtown. And of course, the famous Maxwell Street hot dogs, Chicago style, Polish sausages, that kind of thing. Jewtown. Imagine, if you will, today, a section of any city in the United States labeled outright Jewtown, not whispered in the shadows. It was called Jewtown. Even Jews called it Jewtown. Well, back to, I digress. In our household, there was anti-Semitism. Let's just call it what it was, anti-Semitism. And it was simply that way around most black households of the time. Remember when Jesse Jackson labeled New York City Hymie Town? Eddie Murphy did a really great skit called Hymie Town on a Saturday Night episode, a Saturday Night Live episode quite a few years back, spoofing Jesse Jackson labeling New York City Hymie Town. But for years, and years, blacks have been envious of Jews. The fact that Jews strive for greatness. They don't make excuses. They work hard. They save. All the things, a lot of the things that black people simply did not do at the time. The envy was palpable in my household. In all of the households in the neighborhood that I can recall. Finally, we got away from that. The area along Maxwell Street no longer is labeled called Jewtown. That's politically incorrect. You don't want to do that. As politically incorrect as I am, I would never do that today. Yeah, the streets are lined with $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 condos, homes. University of Chicago has expanded in the area. Jewtown is no more. But still, anti-Semitism reigns across the country. Conspiracy theories, anti-Semitism, it's all there. So with that in mind, we're going to talk about it. But first, I'd like to play a clip for you so you get an idea of what's going on Occupy Wall Street today. Once again, anti-Semitism has reared.
Thousands of people are occupying city centers. They're establishing tent camps all across the country. They're blaming economic problems on rich white Jewish men. These protests are taking place in the state of Israel. The protests aren't anti-Jewish. They're anti-rich, greedy bastards. From Tahrir Square to Tel Aviv to Wall Street, occupy everything.
So it's going on all over the country, all over the world, in Israel, in London, England, all over the place. Anti-Semitism, anti-greedy, they say it's about anti-greedy, rich white folks. But what they really mean is it's all about those Jews. Once again, those Jews are making money off of everybody else and hoarding it. They won't give us any. Those evil Jews, they're the reason why the world is in such trouble. According to many people within the Occupy Wall Street crowd. But are the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations anti-Jewish? That's the question. That is what the Emergency Committee for Israel is claiming. Now, a video that I'm going to play, or an audio I'm going to play in just a minute, features clips of Democratic politicians expressing sympathy for the OWS protesters, followed by audio of some protesters alleging a Jewish conspiracy, suggesting that the conspiracy, the Jewish conspiracy, controls the banking cartels that exploit the American people. Isn't it fascinating, this blanket, the American people, as if whoever is using this term, the American people, is speaking for all Americans. Have you not ever found that to be interesting? I want to get this done for the American people. As if somehow uttering that statement makes whatever it is you're doing all right. Of course, Occupy Wall Street demonstrations are not anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish. That is to say, some of the participants are surely anti-Semitic, just as some are surely anti-black. Some are surely anti-Asian, and some are surely anti-gay. All of these haters are probably found at OWS in more or less the same proportions as they appear in the rest of the population. Perhaps they're simply a microcosm of the population. But the attempts by Emergency Committee for Israel to paint the entire Occupy Wall Street movement as anti-Semitic, when its messages are only representative of extreme minorities condemned by a larger minority, well, we'll find out. We'll find out if that's the case tonight on the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Are these folks anti-Semitic? Is that the case? Well, we'll explore that tonight over the course of this one-hour show. And then we'll talk about it tomorrow again because, hey, it bears delving into. We have Michael Moore. We're going to talk about him a little bit later on, suggesting that, capitalism didn't do anything for him. It was all good. He didn't make any money. He said he had to beg, borrow, and steal in order to get his money. But back to the anti-Semitism in the old WS crowd. Imagine, if you will, during a Tea Party rally, someone saying something like this.
Aim and affiliation.
Patricia McAllister, I'm here representing myself, but I do work for the Los Angeles Unified School District. And I think that the Zionist Jews who are running these big banks in our Federal Reserve, which is not run by the federal government, they need to be run out of this country.
Enough of that. All right. If you could see a picture of this clown yelling at this old Jewish man, you would find it appalling. This is the entitlement age. What we're seeing here is those folks who grew up at a time when everybody was told that they were special. Everybody was special. I remember taking my young son, Nicholas, my youngest son, to soccer. And during the course of the season, win or lose, at the end of the season, every single child received a trophy and was honored. Nobody won because everybody won. That meant no one won because somehow we live in an age where failure is not an option simply because you're not allowed to succeed. So we have people in this particular Washington, D.C., New York City, OWS crowd who believe that they're entitled to something for nothing. And the first clip that you heard was a black woman who works for the school board. A lot of you probably seen that clip before, where she's saying that Jews need to be run out of town, out of this country, run out of the country, because they're the problem. Jewish people, they're the issue. It's nothing else. It's those Jews, those evil Jews. They're the ones who are robbing and raping and pillaging and stealing. Folks, what have we come to? What's going on here? The old supposed Chinese proverb, "May you live in interesting times," was supposed to, was said by some to be a blessing. But really, it is a curse. If you live in interesting times, basically you're living in turmoil and in strife. If you live in uninteresting times, you're living in peace and tranquility. We, folks, are living in interesting times. And I have fear that this country will never truly be the same as a result. We are living in a situation where we have an America that is in steep decline. There's someone looking to get something for nothing everywhere you turn. Hate, envy, misery, all the deadly sins, all rolled into one, can be found at Occupy Wall Street across this country. But mostly envy, jealousy. Well, these are not technically deadly sins, but close enough. Now, there are numerous examples of anti-Semitic speech and anti-Jewish signs at the Occupy Wall Street protests across the country. But the liberal media, ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN, aren't saying much about it. That's because editorially they support OWS, as do many left-wing leaders, including our President Barack Obama, House Majority Leader, Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Senator Bernie Sanders, Independent Vermont, Cornel West, Susan Sarandon, Michael Moore, just to name a few. I've got some more examples of anti-Semitic hatred, envy, jealousy, the kind that could be heard in my household back in the 70s. Thank goodness I was raised to make up my own mind about people. Take a listen to this anti-Semitic hate speech at Occupy Wall Street in New York City.
Political leaders are praising Occupy Wall Street.
American people are now occupying Wall Street. Do you support them?
Well, I support the message.
I think it expresses the frustrations that the American people feel.
I'm with them emotionally, viscerally, in my bones. I know they're right.
What is happening at the Occupy Wall Street protest?
Jews control Wall Street!
You're a bum, Jew.
The small ethnic Jewish population in this country, they have a firm grip on America's media, finances.
You got the money. That's why you're fighting the Jewish man. You can't even speak English. Are you Israeli? Go back to Israel.
Why are our leaders turning a blind eye to anti-Semitic, anti-Israel attacks? Tell President Obama and Leader Pelosi to stand up to the mob. Hate is not an American value. Political leaders are praising Occupy Wall Street.
American people are now occupying Wall Street. Do you support them?
Well, I support the message.
I think it expresses.
So now, why do you think Nancy Pelosi, President Obama, and quite a few senators and congressmen support Occupy Wall Street. Wouldn't you think that they would want to stay as far away from anti-Semitic anything? The president has been brazen about his bias against Israel, from his disdain for Israeli settlements to his shoddy treatment of Benjamin Netanyahu, and some things that have gone on in the background. How do you think this is going to play out in the elections to come up? There's a disturbing undercurrent to the current Occupy Wall Street movement as it relates to many things, but anti-Semitism? It isn't merely its passionate denunciations of capitalism and excuses for corporations. It isn't merely its perverse love for a president who has received more Wall Street money than any candidate in American history, and its hatred for Wall Street itself. It is, in fact, anti-Semitism. Even as President Obama comes out in support of Occupy Wall Street, more and more Occupy rallies are laced with anti-Semitic signs, placards, and slogans. For example, in New York, rallies hold signs reading Google, Wall Street, Jews, Jewish billionaires, Jews and the Federal Reserve Bank. Gaza supports the occupation of Wall Street, and shouting ugly canards like Jews control Wall Street, Jews go home, American Nazi Party is supporting OWS. Who is therefore the number one enemy who makes all this filth happen? Now, not everyone occupying Wall Street is an anti-Semite. There is far too high a comfort level among those in the movement for anti-Semitism. Indeed, if the Tea Party had been even one-tenth as laced with racism and anti-Semitism as the OWS movement is with Jewish people, it would have been put out of business by the mainstream long ago. Long ago. The OWS's complacency with regard to anti-Semitism it mirrors the White House. Think about this, folks. We have a president of the United States who supports OWS, has not come out against the anti-Semitism or anti-Semitism slogans. If you support the Tea Party, then you support what the Tea Party stands for. I am a Tea Party supporter. If you support OWS, then you support anti-Semitism. When they speak about anti-Semitism, and it's laced all over the movement, there's nothing but anti-Semitism, as far as the eye can see, within this movement. Why? The Jews are an easy scapegoat. They have been for centuries. Everything that goes wrong in the world is the fault of the Jews. They are the ones who control Wall Street. They control the corporations. They're part of the Bilderberger Institute or the Illuminati, or even the Catholic Church is controlled by Jews, according to some people. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Is it the Jews? Is that what the problem is here? Let's take one more listen to another clip that's going to give you a direct idea of what's really going on with this movement. Anti-Semitism. That's what it is. And it's prevalent within this particular movement. It's amazing to me why this stuff is allowed to stand. It's amazing. I don't know, folks. I find this all extremely disturbing. Anyway, let's go ahead and take one more listen to another clip of Wall Street protesters. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Bolton, yeah.
Right. Yeah, John Bolton.
Okay.
This is Richard Perlman.
Uh-huh.
That's Wolfowitz.
Wolfowitz. Uh-huh. Cheney. Rumsfeld, of course.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They wrote this 2 years before 9/11 happened, before the World Trade Center was destroyed. In it, they say, we need a new Pearl Harbor in order to justify going into the Middle East, because the people wouldn't accept just sending military over to the Middle East. And there were maybe even terrorists on the plane.
Uh-huh.
But they remotely controlled those planes to go into the towers, okay? And there's also evidence that Mossad, Israeli intelligence, and other intelligence agencies are also involved.
You're right.
Especially in Mossad.
Wait, what?
Not only that, they found, where I live up in Washington Heights, they found a white van on the same day. And who was in the white van with bombs? There was bombs in the white van. Israelis. They captured it. They were going to blow up the George Washington Bridge.
And that's exactly
what they did. And what did they do to them? They let them go.
You're right.
Israel had a definite motive, right?
Uh-huh.
Which is?
Want the United States in there? The United States is essentially doing their job, meaning they are fighting the so-called enemies of Israel, Arab Muslims, right?
Uh-huh.
So why should Israeli soldiers die? Better to create an event and send U.S. soldiers to die, right? They have a definite motive. If you defend the rights of the Palestinian people, you're an enemy of Israel, okay?
It was,
The Taliban had nothing to do with 9/11. We were talking to the Taliban to release Bin Laden. And you know what the Taliban said? The Taliban said, we'll give you Bin Laden. Show us the evidence
first.
Yeah,
they did say that. That's
and
right.
You want to know something?
They
didn't present any evidence. Because guess what? The FBI doesn't have any evidence.
And
you know that Bin Laden is
not
on the FBI's most wanted list charged for doing 9/11? Did you know that?
Because they don't have enough evidence.
Did you know that?
Yes, go look it up. FBI, they don't have it.
For me, Israel is the real reason for the problem in this country.
I think it's Israel.
Everyone
is working for Israel.
Who? What genius?
Okay, I think you get the idea. There has to be a scapegoat. There has to be a villain. Wall Street is the villain. But of course, world history would be remiss if somehow the Jews were not included. The Jews are to blame for every ill in this world. It's all the Jews' fault. Banks collapse, it's the fault of Jews. Banks run smoothly, the economy runs well, it's because the Jews are controlling things. If the economy goes bad, it's because the Jews are controlling things. I never, as a historian, as a person, ever understood why the Jewish people are blamed for almost everything that goes bad in the world. Why are the Jewish people so vilified? Why? Does anybody really know why? Because I don't. I am a world historian. I have no specialty. Everything about history, the history of this planet, from evolution all the way to the most minute detail is part of my domain. And there's one thing that has escaped me all of my life, and that is why Jews are so vilified and being blamed for almost everything that goes wrong. So we have Occupy Wall Street, anti-Semitism, Nancy Pelosi, the President of the United States, a variety of senators cheering on OWS, and thus, in my mind, cheering on anti-Semitism. And didn't we expect that from the President of the United States? Didn't we? All right, we're going to take a short break here, and then our next segment is going to be about, oh yeah, you guessed it, Professor Obama and Investing 101. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. We'll be right back.
I just want to slap a hippie or two. Maybe make him get jobs.
Listen to Insane Government and continue to listen on the WOW Radio Network, weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. Listen to the Dr. C. Robert Jones Conservative Report, weekdays at 9 p.m. Eastern.
I remember America. Sure, you can still find it on a map, but nobody older than 20 thinks this is America. Even if coordinates are the same, we've lost our compass. You don't have a direction without reference, the true north. For America, it was liberty. When we lost the love of liberty, our understanding of liberty, it was just a matter of time before the rest of it was lost. Some think it started when the auto companies were nationalized, or the police state to control the internet, or when certain companies couldn't fail because their relationship with politicians made them too big to fail, and the rest of us, without political influence, were too small to succeed. Sure, that all happened pretty quickly, over just a couple of years, but liberty had been gradually devolving for decades. Some of the more astute, like Ayn Rand, saw it about 50 years before others. She warned us, but people didn't believe it could happen here until it did. Laws had been used to loot productive individuals and businesses, but in the new millennium, under Bush and Obama, graft, corruption, and crony capitalism were no longer hidden behind closed doors. The looters and their laws came out of hiding like rabid animals that were no longer afraid of humans. It was brought into the spotlight, and it was celebrated as enlightened economic policy. Ayn Rand asked the question and Atlas shrugged that the rest of us were asking 60 years later. Which failing financial institution will the administration pluck from the flames of crisis? And which will it let roast? Which market or investment technique will the regulators bless? And which, in a capricious change of rules, will it condemn or outlaw? As John Galt said in his radio address,
"You decided you had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value. You've now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion."
People who had never produced or managed anything tried to manage every aspect of our lives, and they brought production to a standstill. and eventually they decided to micromanage the food supply in the name of fairness and safety. And we all know what happened then. Fiction can be a powerful influence, for good or bad. It's too bad more people didn't read Atlas Shrugged. They might have realized where this was heading.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There's so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it, and I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
All right. Hey, you know, Atlas Shrugged, the movie, is coming out in just a few days. I'm a big fan of Ayn Rand and her novels, Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead. And I'm going to go ahead and get copies for some of my closest friends. Friends like Southern Sense, who has a great blog talk radio show. Friends like Tesla, who have mentored me when I first started hosting a show on Blog Talk Radio. People like Cool Mike and GGT. People like Rapid Fire. People like that. You'll receive a Blu-ray copy of Ayn Rand's movie, Atlas Shrugged. And each successive movie that will come out, there'll be two more. Because I think that you understand what Ayn Rand was talking about more than 50 years ago. As we live in this day and witness almost every single word of every single page play out today. Isn't it amazing that a woman who wrote a fictional novel more than 50 years ago had the clairvoyance, if you will, to see so far into the future. Clairvoyance. of what we would become and how sad it is. So with that in mind, here's a great business model. Start your company with the idea that it's going to go bankrupt. Then, when it falls, inform your investors that the business was a success because it did exactly what you expected. Think that'll work? Because that's more or less what Obama has done with every investment. Every investment government has made over the past 3 years. The energy department's failed green energy loan program is just one example. It appears that much of the $36 billion earmarked for alternative energy firms, including $500 million for Solyndra alone, has been squandered. If that money had stayed in the private sector, it would have produced jobs. As it is, with real unemployment running around 20%, the president has wasted billions on companies that were destined to fail. That, quote, investment, end quote, produced nothing except more debt and slower economic growth. Just to feed the president's pet projects for green energy or a green economy, as Van Jones puts it. It's all about going green. We have a president in the United States who is naive. He is pushing for us to become a nation that drives electric vehicles. Energy of any kind other than fossil fuels. It's a lofty aspiration, there's no doubt. But it's one thing to promote green energy. It's another for the government to be in the business of producing green energy. That's not the government's role. When is this president going to get it through his thin skull that his job is not to produce jobs? His job is not to change the course of this country as it relates to how we do business. It's one thing to govern, but it's another to be involved in business matters, especially if you have no business savvy, if you have no business experience. The President of the United States has barely ever worked a day in his life, certainly never in business. And yet, he is picking winners and losers, mostly losers. Think about this, folks. Among other things we have with this president is that he is investing private money. He's investing taxpayer dollars in businesses that fail. It's not surprising given his lack of real-world experience. It's not surprising that Obama does not understand the meaning of the word investment. Like most in his party, the president thinks every kind of government spending is some sort of investment. His thinking is so tweaked that he speaks of all sorts of welfare, including increases in the earned income credit, an extension of the unemployment benefits past 99 weeks as an investment. How is giving money away to people who don't have jobs, taxpayer money, an investment? What are we investing in? spending more money on affordable housing is an investment. Benefits for homeless are an investment. Funding that makes its way to the coffers of teachers' unions is an investment. Just about everything for this clown is an investment, except an investment. A real investment is a commitment of capital to an enterprise that has a good prospect of producing a reasonable profit. Yes, I said that dirty, filthy word, and I do apologize for using foul language to some of you. It's called profit. The average real inflation-adjusted return for a U.S. stock market, for the U.S. stock market over the past 100 years, from 1910 to 2010, was 8.21%. The annualized return calculating the oversized effect of down years was 6.24%. That means that an investor with no special aptitude or intelligence would have earned 6.24% or slightly less depending on trading costs and taxes. That's what's called an investment. Now, this may sound like second guessing, but the fact that Obama knew from the start that the loan guarantee program was going to entail some risk, apparently quite a bit of risk, which is a fact that the president admitted on October 6th, the purpose of the loans, he told us, was not to make a profit. The purpose of the loans, he told us, was not to make a profit, I say again. Nor was it to create jobs by nurturing truly successful businesses. If Obama really wanted to create jobs, all he would need to do is invest in ExxonMobil or Chevron. Those are the companies that are creating jobs. And in this quarter, the same quarter in which Solyndra and other government-supported, sponsored solar companies filed for bankruptcy, they reported increased profits of 41 and 48% respectively. I'm talking about ExxonMobil and Chevron. Exxon and Chevron are just two examples of companies in the private sector that are creating jobs. But why would Obama want to create jobs in the private sector? Why would he want to create jobs in oil companies? They're greedy. They're rich. They have corporate jets. They're fat cats. So, of course, he doesn't want to create jobs in that area. That is promoting big oil and corporate fat cats and private jet owners. He doesn't want to support that. Instead, he is using his lack of any business knowledge or savvy whatsoever and supporting green jobs. And each successive company that the government has invested in has gone bankrupt so far. Our president is proving that he doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground anywhere on any subject except community organizing. He's an embarrassment to this country. He is an embarrassment to the presidency. He's simply an embarrassment. Everything Obama touches turns to crap. This president has been a total unmitigated disaster from start to finish. Much worse than Jimmy Carter. In fact, I report that the worst thing, it's a bad thing to hire a liberal as president of the United States, to vote for and employ a liberal president. The worst thing that we will learn from this presidency, it is worse, far worse, and far more dangerous to put a black liberal in the White House. Yeah, I said it. It's out there. Putting this clown in office, being both black and a liberal, well, we've doubled down on disaster and stupidity. Coming from a black man, me, your host, who has lived in the black community most of his life, black folks are all about getting something for nothing. Not all of us, because clearly I am not one of them. But more often than not, black people believe that they're owed something for nothing. They're owed something because somewhere down the line, their ancestors suffered. We're taught as kids in the black community that America is full of bad white men, who raped and pillaged and plundered and basically stole everything they have, including the land under our feet. We are raised that way, folks. I'm putting it out there right here and now. We are raised that way. A lot of you white folks who are listening to this show right now, I'm letting you in on the secrets, on the big secrets. We are raised that way to believe that whitey is evil. So you put a black man in office who hung out on the south side of Chicago. He didn't grow up there, listening to whitey is evil. And then you put him in the White House, make him president of the United States, elect him. And now he believes that whitey is evil too. And he's got to do everything he can to pretty much put whitey in his place and fundamentally transform the United States of America into something unrecognizable. Because whitey has ruined this country. They've stolen from the Japanese. They've stolen from black folks. They've stolen from Jews. No, not Jews. Jews are the ultimate thieves, according to black folks. They've stolen from the Indians, the Native Americans. Sorry, not politically correct. They've stolen all of half of Mexico, which is called California, New Mexico, Nevada, and those parts from Mexico. White folks are evil. And you put a black man in office who believes that whitey is bad. And that it's his job now to pretty much turn the tables. So he doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. And he's proving it every single day. This president is an embarrassment to this great country. He is the devil, and we got to keep him down in the hole. The devil is not whitey. The devil is not the white man. It's Barack Hussein Obama. He has got to go November of next year. That's the name of that tune. This guy has proven, that he is a moron. He's an idiot. And that's all I got to say about that tonight. I want to thank all my guests, everybody who came in. I want to thank Southern Sense, Republican Marine, Pendleton Marine, Ned King, John Galt, all the guests in the house. Sally, Kessler, my man, the Binary Prince, Casanova Frankenstein, Evil Clown, Alexander Solo.
When you walk through the garden,
three times I haven't forgot about you, Ned King, either.
You gotta watch your back.
You gotta keep the devil down in the hole.
Well,
you gotta
I
keep Obama out of office.
Yeah, walk the straight and narrow track.
Good night, folks. God bless you.
If you walk with Jesus,
let's get that idiot out of office.
He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Keep the devil way down in the hole. 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 You gotta help me keep the devil.